dimensional, transforming, musical, linguistic object.
Greetings from Cyberdelic Space. I'm Lorenzo, and I'm your host here in the Psychedelic Salon. We've got something a little different for you today. It's a recording of a talk that Christian Rasch gave at the Mayan Ruins in Palenque, Mexico. And if you go to our website, PalenqueNorte.org, that's PalenqueNorte.org, and click on Christian's name, you'll see some pictures that my friend Richard Reset took while Christian was speaking. Now, if you were ever there for one of Christian's tours, you'll remember that this was no ordinary Palenque tour. You know, Christian wasn't in for much of the regulation tour guide stuff. So if you're thinking about maybe exploring the Palenque ruins yourself one day, you might want to load this program on your iPod. Have your own personal tour guide while you're there. Now, just to put this talk in a little better context, I should mention the entheobotany conferences for those of you who haven't heard about these now somewhat mythical conferences. To be honest, once Terrence McKenna got sick and stopped attending, these conferences at Palenque just kind of lost their steam, I think. But at their zenith, I'll tell you, these intimate little psychedelic gatherings of 100 or so people had to at least have personally introduced well over 1,000 tribe members to one another and to some of the leading luminaries of the day. Psychedelic luminaries, that is. Anyhow, these conferences were magical and mystical, no doubt about that. Last time one of them was held was in January of 2001, and on Sunday of the first week, I think it was January 14th, Christian Rasch conducted his next-to-the-last visit to the ruins. And I shouldn't say his next-to-last visit, the next-to-last visit tour for an entheobotany conference. How's that, to be more specific? Anyhow, this recording was made by my friend Matt Palomary, who's the author of Land Without Evil, which I highly recommend you read if you haven't. And he did this on a little handheld cassette tape recorder, so it isn't studio quality, but if you've ever heard Christian in person, you're going to recognize that this is true Palenque quality. So let's listen now to Christian Rasch tell us something about what the Lacandon people know and think about Palenque.
So, okay, I just start. I see you can record and photograph me everything. I'm totally
exhibitionist.
You what?
He's not your horse.
Not yet. But I'm not trying to throw joints on a stage when I give it. But I always don't take them in that moment because I never work when I'm stoned. So I'm very sober this afternoon. Yeah, nobody of you can even detect what language that was. Of course. The people who really link to this place are still alive. And some of them you can see out there. It's the Lacandon Indians, the ones with the long hair and the white tunic. And if you say hello in their language, you describe the weather situation. There is no way to say hello. You say, ah, nechokorkin, for example. It's very hot today. And that's very interesting. Keen is a word that applies to the sun, to the day, and to the diviner. And the sun is very important in this place. There is a temple of the sun over there. And if it's raining, ah, ne yan hap. There's a lot of water. And so there is no way, like we say, hello, nice to see you. You can say, it's very nice that I see you again. But that's different from our words. And so what I want to tell you about is what this little group of Indians, it's approximately 500, still know and think of this place. I'm not an archaeologist. I don't go with you around say, yeah, you see this temple and that temple, and because that is so totally super boring. and it has no meaning at all. The ones who have been here before, they already captured the strong magic of this place. So the ones who haven't been here before? Oh, it's just a few. Well, for archaeology, this place was built between the 3rd and the 10th century, and then it was abandoned, and nobody knows why. And because it's so strange that they abandoned such a fantastic big area, there is a lot of theories that are put on these ruins and onto this spot. And nobody knows what is true. It's even not known what language the people living and working here did speak. We don't know. There is some people think it's the Chol language, that is the main spoken language by the native people living around here now.
Question, you said between the 3rd and the 10th century, is it before Christ?
No, after. Otherwise it would be the 10th to the 3rd.
Just wanted to make sure.
So, you can, if you look at the temples and palaces and whatever they call it, you can find hieroglyphs. The Mayan hieroglyphic writing is supposedly deciphered. I doubt it, because the so-called experts on deciphering that script do not speak any Mayan language. And that is typical in scholarship, that you don't know anything. Unless you do it by yourself. That refers also to the bioassay stuff Jonathan talked about last night. So, the hieroglyphic writing may be similar in the way to use as the Chinese use, because you can use the same writing with different languages. And I think, from what I learned from the native people I lived with, that this was a multilingual place, like the village of Palenque is today. Have you been to downtown? I mean, to this one road? you can meet different Mayan-speaking people, like the Chol, they're living around here, the Lacandones, they live in the deep jungle. You can meet people from Yucatan, the real Maya, the only group who calls themselves Maya. You can meet Tsaltal and Tsotsil. So it's at least 5 different ethnic groups. And then, of course, you can meet the tourists and the freaks and the hippies and so on to meet in this area. And I think that's pretty much the model for this place, that this was not a city, it was a meeting point, it was a university, it was a ritual place, and it was a healing place. And that people of different Mayan languages came here for
either doing rituals or get healing or get advice by diviners and astrologers and so on. And the archaeology tells something like that, that it was a big, big thing. And nowadays, all these different ethnic groups use Spanish as the lingua franca. I don't know what they may have used in old times, but they have to have, because we have a language group of at least 23 different languages called the Mayan linguistic family. And then we also have a certain style here, like pyramids and the way the buildings are set up and so, and the artwork, that's called always Mayan. And if you look at books of archaeology, oh, everything is Mayan from the north of Yucatan until San Salvador, but that's an art style. And art style is not necessarily connected to linguistics and to ethnic groups. Look at European art history. You have an art style in every century or so. And for example, Art Nouveau, you can find in Germany, in Czechoslovakia, in France, even in Mexico. And they all totally different, but the style is very similar. So from the style, we cannot find out what ethnic group was here. And so there is a lot of speculation. And if you read the literature of linguists and of archaeologists, everything is different. And every time they dig out another temple, the whole theory has to change, because then they found something else. So this is the perfect place to dream up your dream. What you want to see in it. What you want to feel in it. How you want to use it. And I just will go into the Lacandon's perspective, because it, to me, it most likely is that they are the people of this place. And it is because they still come here. They have a mythology about all the buildings. They know which temple is dedicated to which god or goddess. Well, they always think in pairs. There is no virginity and stuff. They always in pairs, in couples, the gods and goddesses. And they have a huge amount of explanation for this site. And that is so amazing that I want to give you a little bite of it, because the whole thing to tell takes hours. So, first of all, Palenque is the navel of the world. And that's why so much magic spreads out. If you have never been here, you will feel at least in a couple of days. And what I and many other colleagues and friends and people feel is, this is a place where you really get horny. That's really true. And it's amazing. You will feel it in 3 days at least. I think they choose actually this place because there is some kind of magic or energy or whatever we can tell it. I have no idea what it is. I just feel it. And I really hope you will feel it, especially if you go by yourself through the place and absorb whatever it is, maybe it's just imagination, it's maybe just fantasy, or it's just the tropical climate, I don't know. And so because we don't know much this place, I mean, the historic story of it is written in some of the hieroglyphic tables and so, that that is so boring stuff. It only says, oh yeah, this and that ruler was there, and then this and that ruler came, and I mean, nothing about the culture. It's total boring shit. And it doesn't say anything about cosmology or mythology or science and so on. And but from smaller findings we got out of some tombs here and so on, it's very clear it was a kind of a conscious center. And that is because this is the place where the gods were born. And so according to the Lacandon mythology, right there, in front of the so-called palace and in front of the so-called temple of inscriptions there, is the place where the whole thing started. It was Ka-Koch, Yetulak. That means it was two howler monkey with his wife. They were just there, because nobody can explain where anything comes from. I mean, they have no Big Bang theory, and even if they had, I mean, the Big Bang theory is so stupid. I mean, where did the Big Bang come from? From some fireworks? So, it was this couple. It was just there, and there was only sand. So they were really bored, and they were sitting there and thought, oh, maybe we should create something. And then, just out of nothing, came two plants, and they planted them there. It's the tuberose, the night hyacinth. It's a very beautiful plant with white flowers, and in the evening the flowers pour out the most beautiful perfume. It's enchanting. Has anybody smelled it?
Is that the same as the night blooming jasmine?
No. The night blooming jasmine is sestrum. No, this it's a plant you cannot find in the forest. You only find it with Indians who cultivate it. And that plant is super sacred for them, because that's the plant where the gods and goddesses were born from. So, Kakach planted one, and his wife planted one. And then it went into blossom, and then out of the blossoms came the first three gods from the plant Kakach planted, and the wife, the other one, the companions came out. So they were sitting on the flowers and got bored again. Three and three. So they thought, oh, maybe we should mate. And of course they did. And, well, there came some offspring of some other gods and so. And they were sitting there, oh, what should we do? Oh, why don't we create the world? Maybe you get this in some acid trips or so. I don't know. And they, then they were thinking, oh, what to do? They didn't really want to leave the flower because of this beautiful smell, and they love this smell so much, and they are actually nourished by smell. So then they thought, okay, let's do something. It's like bored children thinking of creating some stuff. So they jumped off the flowers into the sand, and suddenly there were some little stones, like this. So one of the gods took the stone, threw it on the sand, and the stone turned into a mushroom. And he used more stones and threw it out, and there were mushrooms on the sand. But then these mushrooms turned into trees, and the forest started, and the earth got wet? I don't know. It wasn't that soft like sand. It was more firm.
Totally.
And so this whole jungle started from the mushrooms. We don't know what kind of mushroom that was. It's just mushroom. And maybe it was one of the more important ones, like the fly garlic, which is called keep loom. That means the light of the earth. You know the fly garlic, Amanita muscaria? And, I go into that back when I do my little other thing on smoking. And the gods and goddesses collected clay and they made little dolls and they just blew them like this. You may have seen that in magical ceremonies or shamanic stuff, that you blew on something. Even in folkloric things in Europe, if a child has some pain, you blew on them, it goes away, it flies away or so. And then they became alive, and people were created. And there was not a single animal around. But then there was another plant, and I was not able to find the place exactly where it grew in the very beginning, and that is a night jasmine, Cestrum nocturnum. It's a solanaceous plant, a nightshade plant. We even call it nightshade plant. And it also put out some perfume in the night. And from that tree was the Lord of Death born with all his family already. So we have two different plant species which caused the birth of the gods. And the Lord of Death, who came out of the blossom of Cestrum nocturnum, he built his house there. This one, that pyramid there, is his house. Uyatoch Kisin is the Lacandon name for it. Of course, no archaeologist knows of that, because nobody speaks anything else than Spanish or English. And so he wanted to create people, and did, but the main gods and goddesses saw it, and they turned them in shape, and so, and then when they came alive, they turned into all the animals living in the forest, like jaguars and wild cats and tapirs and monkeys and everything. So he was really pissed, and then later, that's a long story, but later he thought he should cause death to people, because he was so fucked up that his people turned into animals. Well, we never know. And the gods, when they finished modeling these clay puppets of human beings, when they washed their hands, the remnants of the clay was still on the hand. And in getting them off, they created all the shit we have to deal with, like snakes and tarantulas and mosquitoes and all the bloodsuckers and you know, everything which is not so nice to us. Ticks and chiggers and so. And because like when you roll off the clay, it looks like a little snake and little pieces turn into whatever, wasp and so. So all poisonous animals were created by the gods. And so they thought, oh shit, what did we do to our people? So then they caught them all and put them in a gourd. And they sent one guy to the ocean, and they said, just dump it into the ocean so it will be gone away. Like people think you can dump an atomic bomb into the ocean and then it's gone. But it's not, of course. And the main god said, oh, don't open it, even if you hear strange noises. I mean, have you ever had all these insects and stuff? There's a strange kind of sound coming out. But the guy who was in charge was so eager to know what is in it, he thought, well, if I lift it a little bit, then I can see, and then I put back the tent. So he did, but everything just went out like a volcano. And they all went on his back and bite him so much, and he ran to put himself into a swamp. But he got bitten very bad, and because of that, he turned into the toad. That is the origin story of the toad. And the toad was later became a very important animal in Mayan art and ceremony, and religion, and so on. And there is many places you can find complete toad skeletons deposited into ritual vessels used for the ceremonial inebriating drink the Lacandons still use until today. And there is also some reports that they use the toad to booster the drink, or to give it more power, or in Lacandon the word for strongness of a drug and for poison is the same. It's yuck. Yuck. I think you use that in American English nowadays. Mm-hmm. But for something else, of course. And they had these vessels. It's like beakers, this big, with mythological paintings on it. There were many found here, and that's the reason I think this was a main ceremonial center. And they put the toad inside. And when they put the beaker into a ritual deposit, what is very common, it's usually outside the site in caves. There's caves everywhere, and you can find a lot of pottery and bones and teeth and skulls and so on. Then maybe this drink that is made out of a tree called balche with honey, it's fermented, and with some other ingredients like the toad, they drank it for made for visionary quest or whatever. It's not so easy to tell what really was going on here. We only can guess. So that was how the toad came in. And I'm sure you heard Jonathan's talk last night about bufotenin and so. Mm-hmm. No, last afternoon it was. And I think that this drink called balche, that names only means a fermented drink with some additives. Served in the Mayan culture, it's the same as ayahuasca did and does in the Amazon. And it's like a ritual drink where you add some stuff to, and maybe some herbs to heal somebody, or some herbs to make them stronger and put the toads in and so. And it's still a chemical miracle. I did a lot of collection, and we did some analysis of the drink and the tree used for it and so on, and but it's still not clear what it really is and how it really works. And it, from the archaeological evidence here, it's totally clear that the people who stayed in this place used that drink in all different ways. And like nowadays, the Mayan groups who are left, they do it purposely, especially for healing, or to thank the gods that they healed somebody. So, for example, if my mother is really seriously sick, I prepare the drink, offer it to different gods and goddesses who I found out by divination which one is responsible or so, and then the community gets together and drink it together, and all the people get the same amount to get high and so, and also to bind the people together. And then I can, during the ceremony, when everybody is getting really whatever, I do some incense burning, and with the fumes coming up, I put my words in what I want. For example, I just say, "Oh, dear gods and goddesses, please come, see, look after my mother, hear her, tell me what is wrong," and so on. The prayers are not standardized. You don't buy a book and, I have to do it this way and that way, or say these words. It's a special way of chanting, and you just put in your own words for your purpose. It's like really talking to the gods through the fumes. Well, I go back to this in another lecture. So, and just, I just got a little tote made by a Lacandon woman down here. You can look at it later. So, additionally to what to this drink that was, of course, invented by the gods, and the god of inebriation is called Bor. Bor is one kind of wild cat, and he went in the forest, into the forest, and took a tree and fermented it. And all the gods died immediately. It was too strong. A fatal overdose. I mean, and this doesn't fit with our concept of gods and goddesses, because they cannot die. And only Bor survived. And because he survived, he could revitalize the gods and goddesses. And then he said, "Oh, this tree is too strong. It kills even the gods and goddesses." And so he reduced the poisonous part of it and turned it into a cultigen, into a plant which can be only be found in culture. So this plant, it's a leguminous tree, a little one. It's called Lancha carpus mulosales. That tree is named Baoche, and Baoche means the essence of the forest. And that they mainly use to ferment this drink with honey, basically. And even the honey can be psychoactive. Have you ever heard of psychoactive honeys? Have you ever anybody tried one? No, that's not the psychoactive honey. Yeah, maybe you will see them here in this area. It's small black bees without a sting. And they collect different plant groups in different times. And sometimes the honey they produce is really psychoactive. I had it a few times because it's very rare to get. And the first time I had it, I didn't know. So I went to one Lakhandown friend and he said, "Oh, I just got some real nice honey. Would you like some?" I said, "Of course." So I took a spoonful, I mean a big spoonful. And after 10 minutes, I got such a hit. I didn't take anything. Oh, shit, it must be in the honey. So this is what they always talk about. And that is why the bees are very present and very important in Mayan art. In Yucatan, especially in the site of Coba, you can see the bee gods coming down from heaven, and they taught the people how to use honey to get high, so that there is an exchange.
Well, can you say something? People who are interested in this topic, Jonathan Ott published a good paper on psychoactive honeys in the Journal of Economic Botany.
Yeah.
About a year.
Yeah, I have that.
But
almost nobody had ever taken some, and there's reports of psychoactive honey from all over the world. So there is from Yucatan, that is the very lowland Mayan area, we know that the shamans use the honey collected from Ololiqui, from Turbina Corimbosa, that contains ergot LSD-like compounds. And then they also use magical spells to enhance the drink, and in these spells you call in all the animals and plants which are considered to be poisonous, and you ask them to put the essence of that poison into the drink. So if your magic is good, then the drink is good. Well, I learned all that stuff, but we don't have the time now to get in there. But going back to the ceremony, so when all the people sitting in the circle and drinking, then if I have a special request from the gods, I go to incense burners. This is a modern one from the Lakhandowns. And here you put in the incense, and it's just you just light it. You will see that later. Here we can do it. And then with the fumes you speak your words, and because everybody is in the same kind of consciousness, it's a collective thing, it will be enhanced. It's like the healthy people give their power to the unhealthy ones, and so on. It's like most circle rituals done in the world with involving psychoactives. And this I'll meet later. The incense burners they used here in Palenque, you can see in the museum. They are very big, and there were hundreds or thousands of incense burners. And next to the steps to the pyramids, they were set, and they must have been used tons of incense. And so
Well, to give you a picture, all these buildings, and there is so many, you can walk for a mile or more into that direction, and you have other buildings and so on. They were all covered by a kind of lime, and they were all painted in the typical Mayan paint. It's basically earth paintings using mineral pigments. And the colors were mainly, well, you can see in the museum, they were like red, reddish, ochre, and what we call the Maya blue. That's a composition very difficult to fabricate. It's made out of different minerals. And so the whole thing looked like a psychedelic trip already. And then with all the fumes, and then with all the other inebriating substances they grow around here, even in our hotel ground we have at least five different plants who are psychoactive. Nobody noticed. I may point them out sometime. And then if you look at the presentations of the Mayan gods and priests, it's unbelievable. It so when people came here, like somebody who was ill and wanted to get healing, they were just blown away from the look of that place. And then they could go to the diviners and to the physicians and so on. And the Mayas, they had a very, very good knowledge how to use plants. And many still have. The Lacandones know a lot how to use the plants, and especially in Yucatan, especially in the state of Quintana Roo, there's a lot of shamans. They still know a lot for all kinds of different purposes, not only for healing, but also to get high or to get insight and so on. One of their favorite entheogens was Datura, the thorn apple, and they still use it, and Ololiqui, the Turbina corimbasa, and also the and so on. And if you see the panels and so from the Mayas, they always the priests, they had headdresses made out of wood, basically with feathers and shells and so. I actually brought one shell. This is the holy shell of the Mayas. If you want, I can hand it around. I just got it in Veracruz because it's a shell from the Gulf of Mexico. The shell? That's a turbinella.
Did they use it as a instrument?
Yeah, they use the shell mainly as a trumpet. They cut off what is called the apex, and in these days when they do these inebriating rituals, collective rituals, they blow the shell so people know, oh, something is going on. And if you want to attend, you can come. It's not that you have to, you may do it to partake in it, and so on. And the shell is also the symbol of evolution of the universe, and maybe you have heard some stuff of the Mayan calendar. First of all, 2012 is not the point. We even don't know how really to correlate the Mayan calendar with ours. There's different perspectives on it. The calendar showed that there is a constantly evolution starting going back to the same point, but in a different way. And so at the end, the shell is open, and we don't know what happens then. And that is like what people think, oh, there is the end of the world or so. I don't believe in the end of the world because I, who knows? Many prophets told us already, and they all failed. There's not one prophecy in history that became true. And the Mayan calendar was like a shell, very much. And from that calendar, some of the priests did divination. And that is obviously what many people did here in Palenque. And we don't exactly know much of it. We know how they divine in these days. We have in some Mayan ethnic groups the people called the day keepers. And the day keeper is more like a consultant you go to if you have a problem, if you don't know, should I do this or that, or whatever. You go to him, and then he uses a calendar, and like tarot cards, I mean, they have no meaning at all. It's what you put in, and it's like more a consultation and a psychotherapy thing. So they use some tools to get into a deep conversation with a person who needs help. And I think that is true for every kind of divining tools that they use as triggers to get into a good, deep conversation and help people with what you say. And that's why they say, oh, this is a good diviner and that's a bad one, because the good one has more skill to get into your psyche. It's like, oh yeah, she can do a good tarot reading and she not. It's the same thing. And or if you do the coca oracle, throwing leaves and read them, so called, and or the bone oracle, what is famous in South Africa. It's all the same thing. It's an outside trigger for an internal process. And what we learned from the left gatekeepers, they do that way. And that's fantastic because it really helps the people. And that is one thing I'm very sure from the archaeological remains here, that it took place here a lot. And it also looks like that this was one of the astronomical centers. Archaeologists believe that the tower, you can't see here now, but in Lacandon mythology, the tower in the palace here is the house of the sun. And archaeologists believe that this is was an observatory to look at the stars. And the astronomy of the Maya was unbelievable. They really could picture the cause by the day, and so the days became very important. And if you get into the Mayan calendar, that is has been used in all these inscriptions here for putting dates, then you have always a connection to animal spirits or plant spirits or planetary spirits and so on. And then they always said, we have many souls. One soul is the animal soul that lives as an animal in the forest. So you connect it to the forest automatically. That's the wild part. Does any one of you know what is your soul, your animal soul?
Yeah.
do you know?
Wild boar.
A wild boar, great. Yeah, somebody got a mosquito, and they very much ashamed to tell. And the animal spirit is very important, because that's your connectedness to nature, to the wild nature. And because of that, you learn a lot about ecology in, when you get raised up. And you feel related to the forest. It's not the green hell. This is, the forest is the world. The Mayan name for world is Kash. And Kash means forest. And that brings me to the end now. Here was the creation of the world, but this is not the center of the world, it's the navel. Like if you look at your body, your navel is not the center, the heart is the center. So, when the gods built this all, they got bored again, and then they went into the forest to this place, what is called Yashchilan. You have heard of that, I'm sure. Some have been there. It's an enchanting place, and if you want to complete your Palenque experience, you have to go there, unfortunately, because Yashchilan is the center of the world. And the big pyramid in the center of Yashchilan is the house of the main gods. And in there is a statue of the main god. And there is the place, when you look into heaven, there is what they call the consciousness of heaven. And, I get,
Goosebumps
or whatever, if I just think about it. Because if there is a very serious case of illness, the Lacandons still go there into the main temple, because there is the shortest connection to the center of heaven, to the universal mind, which is keeping everything alive. Yeah. I don't know. This I need later. Please explore this place by yourself. Forget archaeology. Go after your heart. It's big. And never do like a tour. I will be in the plaza over there. Do you see this pyramid? Mm-hmm. That is that one? That's the house of the smoking god. That's the most shamanic place in this area. And shortly before the site closes, I give a little talk on the smoking god and on smoking. I think we have to be out at 5, so 4:30. And usually there's only a few people left when I arrive there, but it's very interesting, and please try to walk up the pyramids over there, because inside the temples on top is very beautiful artwork, very, very nice, and that's the main part to me.
Let me go, please.
Just you have to go.
I have to go. Okay, we will find a few more minutes somewhere, maybe outside or so, if you're still interested.
Sure.
That really brings back a lot of fond memories. Unfortunately, they're not the kind of memories you want recorded in an MP3 file, if you know what I mean, but fun nonetheless. After hearing Christian's talk again, I can think of about a dozen things right now I'd love to talk to you about, but I think this program has probably gone on long enough, so I want to thank Christian for his great insights, Shatul Hayuk for their fine music, Mateo for the recording, and all of you for being here with us in the Psychedelic Salon. And yes, I do remember that my last podcast, I told you that this program would be a feature by Bruce Damer, and obviously that didn't happen. But hopefully we'll have Bruce here with us in the next edition of the Psychedelic Salon. For now, I'm Lorenzo, signing off from Cyberdelic Space. Be well, my friends.